Everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELAC 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM and 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend, talking about all the news in the world of sports. You know, I wanted to start talking about hockey with you, and you're like, why? How you doing, Jeff?
I'm fine. I'm looking forward to hockey tonight, but I don't see what... Nothing's happened in the last couple of days. So you wanted to talk hockey. I'll be glad to talk hockey. I love the Stanley Cup Finals.
Well,
I love the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Since we last spoke, it's gone from Sergei Bobrovsky as a Hall of Fame goalie and Florida is going to sweep. They're up 3-0 to they've looked chaotic. The games have been spastic. I think Edmonton's outscored them 12-4 in the last two games, and they're headed back to Edmonton tonight, where it will be an absolutely crazy scene. You have to be looking forward to that. I mean, we talk about Canadian hockey and the fans and the enthusiasm. You have to be looking forward to how excited those people are going to be in Loud, right?
Well, I just think that the Edmonton Oilers are like the secret that nobody seems to know about. That Edmonton is so far away from everything that nobody, especially in the United States, thinks about it. But they have the best player on the planet by far, surrounded by the best offense on the planet as far as hockey is concerned. And they are incredible. Now that they've figured out how to score, they're exciting to watch.
Oh, the moves that McDavid can make, not even just to score goals, but to set up other guys, is just dazzling to watch. But I do think it's a fail on the part of the NHL that you have the chance to have free reign. Basketball's over, no football. Yeah, there's baseball games, but like last night, there was no game in Philly, no hockey game. There's been five hockey games in 18 days. And frankly, the ratings reflected. I know you don't care, but I view that as are people interested in watching? And you and I know that people like the Stanley Cup, but the ratings are up from last year, down from previous years. So it just hasn't been an interesting series.
So what does that mean? The ratings are up from last year.
It means that people have more interest than what they saw last year on their TV. Per Nielsen, they're up 50% from last year's Panthers-Kings game, or Panthers-Knights game. Like, clearly that was a matchup they didn't care about, but it was down 13% and 20% from Lightning and
Avalanche. Ratings year over year, again, that ratings is your thing. It's not my thing. I don't spend a lot of time doing ratings. But here's the thing. If you asked people on the street who were in the finals last year and to name two players that were in the finals,
they wouldn't know.
Who would be able to name it outside of Vegas and Florida? The fact is you now have the star of the sport. That's why ratings are up. Connor McDavid is the sole reason that the NHL Stanley Cup final ratings are up. That's my position, and I'm sticking to it.
That's your take. We've talked a lot.
And by the way, you say that they should capitalize on there being no basketball. Well, there's no basketball because there was a boring final.
Yeah, but even if there would have been basketball every other day or every third day, I mean, they know how to schedule. They know how to work these things out. I just think it's amazing that there's been so much time between games. Now, you and I have had guests on.
Well, see, and that's, I was waiting for some, I've been waiting for like a week now for the following text message from Jason. The distance between Edmonton and Florida.
Like, I sent how you that.
I literally, I have been sitting here with somebody.
You clearly don't read your text messages then. I sent it to you a week and a half ago.
Really? I missed it.
Yes.
I totally missed it because I have literally every day
I
been
sent
sitting
you
there joking with our former assistant saying over and over again, the two of us going, I wonder when Jason's going to send something.
Go back to your text messages.
Is this the farthest distance between two teams in an NHL Stanley Cup final?
Yes,
which
it
I'm
is.
Assuming the answer is yes, because I don't know if there is any other farther.
It is the furthest distance, and it's also the farthest north and south. So, yes, it is. And I sent you those things. So for our listeners, clearly you can hear that my co-host, who we work so well together, doesn't care when I send him stuff. He just kind of,
well, to be fair. So we could, you know what? This is one of those weeks that we should take calls, because here's why. Because I'm guessing that there's going to be people, a lot of people that are going to be yelling at their radios right now.
Over you.
No. There are lots of people who do what you do, and there are lots of people who do what I do.
Okay.
And what you do is, and we've had this discussion for a close to a decade.
Oh, you're going to go into how I send multiple text messages.
About that, you don't send a single text with a thought. You send a series of texts with sometimes with the same continuing thought, which could be three or four texts, instead of just going, all right, let me finish the thought and then I'll hit send. And what ends up happening is I either get annoyed, which I'm sure a lot of people do, or I lose track and don't go up high enough to see what the original text was of the 30-second text chain.
And the way that Jeff would prefer to receive information is a legal brief. He wants paragraph after paragraph after paragraph in one text message. And to me, that's how I lose things.
No, everything's I would in prefer one. That it all be one simple sentence of two lines or less.
But some things require more thought. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean that that's not factually true. I realize that
there's probably people yelling at their radios right now, sitting or going, yeah, and some going, yeah, for me, and some going, yeah, for you.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely different styles, mm-hmm. Without a doubt. I just think it's funny that you were waiting for something that already came.
Yeah, that, I will admit that is rather amusing because I can't tell you how many discussions I've had going, I can't believe he hasn't sent it. Turns out he has.
If you check back right after Florida and right after Edmonton won, so look at your dates and your text messages, you will see that.
That's another thing I don't ever do is scroll back in my text messages.
You'll see that I sent that over. One thing, and I know you don't always care about this, but we've talked to guests about sports broadening their audiences to other people. And I've talked to you about, you know, the golf show on Netflix and other things like that. Amazon picked up an NHL thing from the people who made Drive to Survive, where they're going to follow guys like Connor McDavid and Drysdale. They're going to follow Jacob Trouba and Matthew Tkachuk. Do you think that this is an opportunity? Like, I think this is good for sports that they have more. I don't think that you will necessarily watch this, but
I might. I mean, some of these things I do watch. I have not watched the golf one. I have watched the tennis one. So I've watched the ones that I have less of an interest in. I have not watched the driving one. It depends on, and you often bring up the golf one. The golf one, it has a very specific reason why I haven't watched it, which is LIV Golf. And I still find the way that that's been handled, the way it's continuing to be handled. Think about it. I know that you didn't have on your list of top 10 things to discuss today, but since you brought it up, and I still don't understand what the PGA and LIV Golf are doing.
No clue.
They supposedly reached an agreement a long, long time ago, and that agreement has not been finalized.
No.
We still have LIV Golf. We still have PGA Golf. We don't know who can play where. We don't know whether points can be done here or there. We don't know what the final agreement is. We don't know whether all the players are now kumbaya getting along. We don't know anything except we're supposed to keep watching golf and pretend it's not happening.
Well, and I kind of think the sport continues to languish with uncertainty because a fan like you doesn't know whether he wants to be in or out because he doesn't like the situation. So there's plenty of people who will just watch the golf, but there's other people who think the other factors that go into it and don't want to do that.
I'll take it one step further. I love playing golf, not doing that anymore. Like, really? It literally has taken the passion out of the sport for me.
Well, neither like,
that's
am I,
what but... they don't realize. Somebody who buys golf balls and buys golf clubs and watches golf and goes to golf tournaments. I'm not your regular fan, right? I'm somebody who
no, golf you had tickets
part of my life.
To cover.
I have a whole lot more free time now because I don't watch or play golf.
You've gone as a spectator to major championships. You've gone to cover them through the show. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there is a large group of people like you? Like, how large is the segment?
Well, you tell me. What's the you're going to have to do?
I don't know. I haven't seen a breakdown of. Well, nobody watches LIV Golf when it's on TV. It's on the CW. It gets no ratings. But they're not doing it to get ratings. They're doing it to whitewash what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a different goal for LIV Golf than the PGA. The PGA's ratings go up and down generally depending on who's in the tournament. You know, you can't go. Scottie Scheffler gets arrested and the ratings are through the roof. So it's like a TMZ golf tournament. Mm-hmm. So you can't necessarily do comparison year over year like that. But I do think... Like I told you, when baseball went on strike in 95, my stepdad never bought a ticket again. Still, mm-hmm. to this day, has not bought a Phillies ticket unless it's like to take the grandkids. That's it. He will not go himself. He's not interested. He will watch it if it comes on TV. But he used to go to games all the time.
Well, that's me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that you're alone in it. I really don't.
I literally can measure some milestone moments in my life by watching golf and who I was watching golf with. And it's sad to me, but this is where we are. And by the way, I'm, as a spectator, somebody who's worn out from it, I will tell you that it's just my own opinion that this whole LIV Golf thing has destroyed one of the stars of the sport, Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, the golfers.
I believe that he is burnt out from having taken a stand, watching people not take the stand with him, and him being the face of right and being criticized for it.
I think it's definitely been a heavy burden on the golfers to have to carry and to be put in a situation where you have to answer financial questions and geopolitical questions about things when you didn't ask for this. You didn't make the choice for the leagues to try and merge. You didn't make the choice for LIV to exist in the first place. So, you know, it's not going away.
The existence and idea of LIV Golf has created villains. And I know some people believe that sports needs villains. I'm not one of those people, but I understand that people do. But it's created villains in places you would not expect villains to exist. Rory McIlroy has to take slings and arrows for no apparent reason. Go find something that he has said that's so horrible that people are taking shots at him.
Which generally,
it's not necessary.
Which generally you would think, you know, good guys and villains, controversy generally creates cash and ratings. But I think it's created fatigue among golf fans. They don't care about it. They don't want to hear about who's funding their golfers or which tour they're on.
Well, you know what? We're going to very shortly have on a guest. And I want, if between our two old heads, if we can remember after we're done to continue the conversation about villains and controversy creating ratings, I would like to have that discussion regarding what's going on with the WNBA.
Okay.
So let's see if we can actually remember to do that as we get there.
Let's see if we can remember that. Maybe I'll send you a text message you won't read.
Send it all in one.
Let's leave the controversy there. We will try to remember to revisit it, Jeff. Let's move to some baseball. You're going to be hearing prospects' names all over the place in the next month and a half as we get to the trade deadline. Our man Tom Hausnick knows these guys better than just about anybody around there. Tom, how you doing, man?
Not too bad, guys. How are you guys doing? How's the summer going?
Jeff thinks it's hot. He's melting.
Yes.
It is hot out, and it's getting hotter, apparently. So
I made the mistake of going to the Yankees Orioles game before I even sat down. It was 100 degrees, and it was a 5-0. So,
but he got to see Cole Irvin pitch.
That's right. I did. I got to see Cole Irvin. Didn't have his best game of the season, that's for sure.
But he's been pretty good.
He has.
And he's one I'm a little bitter about.
So is Jeff. He was one of our favorite interviews. We talked to him when he was talking about making fishing rods in his hotel room while they were on the road.
You can ask him two questions. That's 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And topic could be anything. He was so well-versed and had so many interests. He is a very unique individual.
Well, I think this is a good lead into one of the things that I'm concerned about. And Jason, you can go with what you're concerned about with the Phillies is Taiwan Walker. You know, look, if the worst thing that you have is you need an outfielder and you need a fifth pitcher, I guess that's not so bad considering what's happened to the rest of the league. But Taiwan Walker does not seem to me like a solution to get through the season. I'm not worried about the playoffs because you're not going to go with five starters. But is there something that the Phillies can do other than Spencer Turnbull, who I don't think is going to be able to hold up for a whole season starting? That they can do. Is there anything in the minors? Is there anything you're hearing as to what the Phillies do with regard to the situation?
Well, as you guys, I'm sure, aware of, there is not a whole lot of pitching prospects in the higher levels of the minor leagues. That's certainly not an option. Right now, the AAA's best pitcher is a guy by the name of Michael Mercado, who they've been slowly stretching out as a starter, and he finally pitched 6 innings in his last start. It was also the first time he ever gave up 3 earned runs in a start. All came in one inning against AAA's best hitting team, Norfolk.
Every pitcher on that AAA roster, except for Lazar, Lehman, and Mercado, have an ERA over 5.
And it's been well earned. There are a lot of, I mean, you know, to be truthful, there's a lot of good hitting prospects in AAA. They're just, most of them are not with the Iron Pigs. So they have faced some really good hitters. But again, you've got David Buchanan, who's 34 and spent the last, what, 7 years over in Asia. You've got Colby Allard, who has been in and out, former major leaguer, who, you know, again, has probably seen better days. Now, Andrew Painter's not pitching.
How about,
Mick Abel is struggling mightily.
can we stay on Mick Abel for a sec? You know, he is one of the guys that was one of the corner pieces when you're talking about pitchers that are there. It was Painter and Abel. What has happened to Mick Abel? He's got a 1-7 record with a 6.93 ERA over 11 starts at AAA.
He has always had an issue running into an inning in which he can't get out of, and that has not changed. He just loses feel for whatever pitch or two that happened to be working that night and just can't find his way out of crooked number. A lot of times that we've seen in the past, especially when it's been a big start, whether it's the season opener or whatever, he can't get out of the first inning, and he's done all right there, but he just has had issues with. Is he just hasn't had command of all his pitches at any one time. He said it. He said, "I have not been comfortable with my three pitches in one game yet this year." And here we are, you know, about to turn the page to July. So he's not going to be an option anytime soon. And I've been afraid that he may never be an option, which also leads to the number three guy, Griff McGarry. He's currently on the injured list with a back issue, and they've pushed him to the bullpen for, you know, for the second time, and that's probably where he's going to stay if he's going to have any chance of helping the Phillies or anybody else. Again, his issues, same thing. Big mistakes, they multiply real quick, and you know, you can't get back a three-run homer or a four-run inning, and that's been the issue for both of those guys. And again, confidence is another thing. Once things start to go south, then you can just kind of see the body mechanics change, the slump of the shoulders or shaking of the head. And again, they're two good guys, but they're not real confident guys either. And right now they haven't given themselves a whole lot to be confident about.
Well, my concern when I hear words like uncomfortable, body language, is that this is a mental thing more than it is a physical thing, that they have the physical tools to be successful. Is this just them and their makeup, or is this we don't have the right people around them to get them in the right frame of mind? Do they need somebody like a sports psychologist? Do they need a different mentality for a pitching coach to get them over the hump?
I think they are both working with, you know, psychologists, sports psychologists. And again, they're both kind of the same person. You know, if you had a sister, you'd want to date these guys. They're both really nice guys. But it's clear when you watch them pitch that when something isn't right or isn't going right or doesn't go right, they have a hard time bouncing back. Mick Abel's stuff is good enough to play not only at AAA but in the majors. There's no question he has the stuff. He just can't put those three, you know, three pitches together. And again, you don't need three pitches every inning of every game. He just when one pitch goes, he has one pitch working, and when that goes, that's when things kind of go off the rails, and he's unable to get it back. And it's really a shame because he's got the stuff. He's not Andrew Painter. I think it's clear of those three guys, and for the first time I saw the three of them a couple of years ago, Andrew Painter is clearly the best pitcher of those three. And he also has a different makeup. He's one of those guys that said, you know, he's a Philadelphia kind of attitude. Like, here you go, hit it, and I don't think you can. And if you happen to hit it, he's on to the next pitch before the ball even lands. He just has a different mindset about him. And I think we'll see that when he gets back next year. But for now, I think it's a real struggle to watch Abel pitch, and
Well,
you feel bad for him.
if that's the case, then as we get closer to the deadline and the Phillies do need either a fifth starting pitcher or an outfielder, do Griff McGarry and Mick Abel still have the cachet to get you anything significant, or is their value you're going to sell as low as you possibly can on them? And do the
I,
Phillies are the Phillies want to do something like that?
I, I think they're really stuck, especially when somebody looks at now that now we're not talking about a handful of starts with Abel. We're talking about a significant body of work now where he struggled at the higher levels. So you're not going to get any kind of return that you feel you need to put you over the edge if you're the Phillies. They're going to have to package something more than that. And you hate to see them dig into their top prospects who are, now sitting in AAA or single A to give them away just to get a fifth starter. I really think that would be a no-no in my book. I would not want to see an Aiden Miller or Justin Crawford moved just to get a fifth starter. But what they have to offer in AAA with guys who are still prospects is not going to bring them that.
Before we get to the guys at the younger levels, I did want to go with AAA for one sec. Roman Quinn sent back down. Obviously, he was the only one that had any options. So I don't know whether they wanted him down, whether they wanted to work
whoa,
on.
whoa. You mean Johan Rojas?
Or Johan Rojas.
We
My God, what
love
am I
Roman
doing?
Quinn, but that
Oh,
there's
my
a flashback.
goodness. Oh, my goodness.
You were about to break news, including to Roman.
How embarrassing that I did that. Johan Rojas sent back down. You should have seen Tom's face there. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Johan Rojas sent back down. He was the only one that had options in terms of some flexibility, but they clearly want him to work on some things. He had a great game last night. The thing that was most significant to me was he threw down a bunt. Like, if that's all that that man does in the minors is practice catching the ball and bunting, I'm cool. But what are the Phillies looking for him? Because I figure when they expand rosters, he'll end up back up with the big team.
I don't think he's here for long. I really think that they know they have something there. It's just he needed some time to kind of work on a few areas, and believe me, they're putting him through. Listen, he's like he's in the military right now. He is busy from 2 o'clock on. They've got him working on things defensively. They've got him working in the cage. Again, he still loves that. And a lot of right-handed hitters love that high pitch. He's still swung at a whole bunch of those in the first three games with the Iron Pigs. And of course, they're working on the bunting situation. I mean, that's every day. He's probably going through 10 minutes of bunting every day, which you don't realize how long 10 minutes is until you have to bunt. They're creating every possible situation that they could possibly think of to get, to put him in that he would either need to bunt or want to bunt and getting to learn. So much of it is learning situations. He tried to bunt the first game he was down here, and it was the completely wrong situation. It was a 2-0 count, two outs, nobody on, and they were down by, or they were winning by multiple runs. It was just a situation where there was no way he should have even tried to bunt, and he did, and he bunted it right back to the pitcher. And you brought up Roman Quinn. Roman Quinn went through a similar thing. Fastest guy in the world, and at the time, he couldn't bunt. Like, all you had to do was put on the ground and not at somebody, and you were on first base. And it's a similar situation with Rojas, and his bunt last night was very good. And they had no chance. No matter who was playing third base, they were never going to throw him out. So again, I think with him, it's there. There's still some things for him to learn defensively. His speed, it makes up for a lot of mistakes, and route taking, et cetera. But he's really close to being the center field. I think they want him to be, and now it's just a matter of repetition without the pressure. And I don't think it's going to be until expanded rosters, he's back up there. I think he's up there soon. And then, the Phillies are already trying to figure out what they're going to do to make room for him. But he's close. Again, if his pitch selection gets better, that will be a tremendous step for him. I haven't seen that much of that yet. Although last night, like I said, he had four hits and a walk, and one of those hits with a bunt. The other one was a opposite field home run to win the game in the eighth inning. But he's close. It's just, I think this little boot camp here, whether it's 2 weeks or a month, is really gonna work for him. He's working. He's not pouting. He's not, he's doing interviews even. He's doing everything right now. And they're not having to drag him out to the field, 5 hours for a first pitch to work on any of this stuff. He's doing it willingly, and I think it's a good step and a good sign. There have been guys who've been sent down here in the recent past, and that hasn't been the case. So I think it's a great thing that he's willing and the tools are there. So I think it's
I
exciting.
think that you are the MVP of the show, Tom, for having turned Jason's faux pas and using Roman Quinn
I
to make
appreciate
your
you.
point. That was so well done that we went from an oops to actually using it as the example.
I appreciate you.
Of what you need to do.
He's come up in conversation in recent weeks twice. Once seriously with Rojas and Bunting, and the other one was when we've got a guy down here, Matt Kroon, who is a you know, who's got a chance to be a major league fourth outfielder. He's a real hard nosed kid who only knows how to play one speed. And now his body's starting to break down because he only plays one speed, which again reminds us of Roman Quinn, who couldn't go to the bathroom without getting hurt and finding these unique ways to get injured on a baseball field. So he did come up twice in the last couple of weeks for a lot of reasons that you know, we wish we still had Roman Quinn around because he was so fast and so talented.
In looking at the Phillies, do you think that the Phillies, let's assume that JT comes back and he's healthy when he comes back, and then we don't need some sort of catcher because I don't think we can go with the catchers that we have right now. Is Nick Castellanos the thing that needs to be resolved?
I don't think so. The Phillies are in a situation where their lineup, and they can survive having Johan Rojas hit 240 and Nick Castellanos doing what he's doing, where he's streaky and most times it's going well, but they've got enough guy lineup that they don't need to have the perfect fit at all those eight field positions and don't need to worry a whole heck of a lot about the starter. They don't need to worry about finding maybe another bullpen piece, which would bring in a guy like Max Lazar, who has certainly earned a shot at some major league roster, or maybe he's a trade piece because he's pitched so darn well. I think they're fine. I that's the thing. I don't want to see them overreact and get rid of a prospect or someone who may become a prospect like Max Lazar. Just kind of let it play out as it does. I mean, you're in a position other than starting pitching, you're in a position where you've got enough pieces to be better than everybody else in the National League, in my opinion.
Let's talk about the guys at the lower level who are really moving up. Aiden Miller, you know, teenage infielder, already up for Jersey Shore. George Klassen sent up with him, the pitcher. And then you mentioned Crawford, who, I mean, he had a 5-game hitting streak before he went hitless on Wednesday. He's hitting .296 since his, and he's looking to be promoted to Reading. Talk about those guys, because if I'm a team that's trying to make a move, those are the guys I'm asking for.
See, that's kind of my point. They don't have, you know, even if we go into next season and we look at 2025, they're not going to have a prospect starting the year at Triple A high prospect, other than, you know, depending on what happens with Andrew Painter, but they're not going to have somebody sitting in Triple A who just needs 100, 200 at bats or 5 or 10 starts to get that call up, or, you know, if somebody gets hurt that they're ready. So I would hate to see them. They've really worked hard here in the last couple of years to build up a nice handful of really good prospects. And again, they're all young. Even if you go beyond those two you mentioned, I mean, Starlin Cobb is only 18 years old. Brian Rincon, 20. You go on down the list of their top prospects. They have a 17-year-old in the top 10. I mean, it's just, you work so hard to collect them. You don't want to just start trading them off to get a veteran piece for 3 months or a year. You don't. They're in a position. I know they need to win now, but they're not in a position where they need to sell their souls with some of these young guys they've worked so hard to draft and already start to cultivate into looking really promising for the future. So I think they have to be really cautious here. Dave Dombrowski's been down this road before, so it's not like this is new to him, but they'd have to be really cautious with who they're going to be offering up or exposing for a potential rental here at this point, where I think they're, again, clearly the best team in the National League. I know there's Dodgers fans all over the East and West Coast, but the Phillies are the best team. And again, they're also the healthiest, and otherwise we'd be talking about a different situation involving the Braves. But I think they have to be careful, and I don't want to see them give up any of the names we've mentioned so far. I think these guys have a real chance to be really good. It's been a while for me where I could say that about a position player with the Phillies in the minor leagues, that, you know, probably since Scott Kingery, and that hasn't worked out real well. God love the guy last year with the in the system, but I think these young guys here are really, really talented, have a chance to be special. We see them coming through in other organizations, and we think, when are we going to finally see them with the Phillies? And I think in a couple of years, you can see that, you can see some of these guys become really good players in the major leagues.
Well, until I get here, there is one more question that I have for you, because we go through this almost every time we have you on. How am I so wrong about Kyle Schwarber? How is this working, and now he's hitting over 250?
I mean, you talk about a guy who's willing to make adjustments and forget about the weight loss. That has nothing to do with it. He just has kind of reinvented himself. He's, and again, he's not one of those guys who has ever been one of the most gifted players, athletically, whatever, but he just finds a way to make what he does work. And you can win with a lot of guys like that. And obviously he's a great clubhouse guy and, you know, one of the leaders. That's great. But he's been willing to do whatever it takes to help whatever team he's on at that particular point. And here he is into his 30s and he's still kind of doing it. And I think it's fun to watch. And obviously the fans just kind of cling to a guy like that. He just kind of just fits that Philadelphia personality. And I think it's great to see. And it doesn't surprise me. He, you know, again, I don't want him with a glove on, but that's not what he's getting paid for.
Amen.
And he's getting paid to hit, and he's doing it really well, and it's fun to watch. And again, that's why I don't get too worked up about Nick Castellanos. He's had his moments. He's going to have his moments. Is he going to be the guy that we saw play for, you know, other major league teams in the past? No, he's not going to be that 300 hitter that, you know, you can't get out for 3-4 week stretches. But he's enough for what the Phillies need right now.
Well, I just enjoyed Jeff being proven wrong. So let's keep that going. Tom, thanks for always giving us a few minutes to go over what's going on down on the farm and what's going on in the whole system as well. Take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you throughout the summer.
And by the way, if you see Roman Quinn while you're down there, let us know.
I would love to talk to him, man. I still think he'd have been a great NFL receiver, but he probably would have been, you know, getting killed playing that sport. So who knows?
Yeah, he's injuring prone as is. If somebody's drilling their helmet into him all the time, that wouldn't have helped the situation.
No, he figured that out at a young age, so he was smart enough to do that.
Thanks so much, Tom.
All right, guys, take care.
It just, I always appreciate Tom's perspective. I don't understand the inability to bunt. Like I said, that was the most important thing I saw from Johan Rojas, even if I didn't get his name right. Thanks for calling me out on it, Jeff.
Well, the look on his face was what you should have called you out. It didn't do it. I actually, if you go back when you listen to the replay and count how many seconds before I went, whoa.
He was very confused. Everybody was very confused, which is kind of the story of my life. When I talk to people, they just get confused. So I understand that. But I mean, you asked, you went to
show. I don't agree about Castellanos, Dan or Nick.
Yeah, no matter what you call him, you will never agree with that.
Exactly. I know that the Phillies look like they can survive this because of the way that they've played this year. But when you get to the playoffs, you can't survive having a bottom of the lineup that cannot hit or cannot reliably get run and put too much pressure on the top of the lineup at all times. Now, obviously, the showman has no problem with pressure. I'm not worried about that. I don't want to start putting a whole bunch of pressure on Trey Turner, who plays best when he's relaxed. I don't want to put pressure on Alec Bohm and Bryson Stott and Marsh in those situations. And if JT doesn't come back healthy, you see what the bottom of the lineup looks like now.
Okay, so I'll push you. How far do you go with that? How much does Nick Castellanos not being there mean to you? Does that mean you're willing to put a Crawford, a Miller, a Klassen, those guys that are coming up in that deal? Because if you're getting an outfielder that isn't just a rental, that isn't just like an older guy to play there and catch the ball, so you would do that. You would.
Well, it depends. I mean, people keep talking about Luis Robert. I mean, he's having an awful season this year, right?
Yeah.
So I don't get what the excitement or the buzz is for him. But let's say you can get. There was a name thrown out, and I have no idea how legitimate it is, Kyle Tucker being available. If Kyle Tucker is available, would you do it? I would.
Who would you give? Would you give Crawford or Miller? Because I wouldn't give both.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I'm telling you, I would. If you have this team, this is a win-now team. Mm-hmm. I understand not wanting to mortgage your future for a rental. But if you can get a player that's going to be here for 3 or 4 years, I'm not going to worry about 4 or 5 years from now.
Would you?
I just can't.
Would you do it for a fifth starter, or only for the outfielder or bullpen piece? Like, where do you draw the line?
No, because I don't think you're going to have to. Because the fifth starter that you're talking, you're not looking for somebody who's going to pitch in the playoffs.
No,
you're looking for somebody who's going to make sure that your top four starters don't blow out their arms.
Yes.
That's what you have to worry about.
That's where I'm wondering if they can piece that together where they can then deal with other needs between turn. I don't understand why they don't make Turnbull the starter and then have Walker come in as the back end and just piggyback them.
Because of the number of innings that he has not been able to pitch over the
years.
But
in that scenario, you have Turnbull going 2 or 3 innings each outing and then Walker coming in. Walker struggles the third time through the rotation.
Yeah, but that's... See, the problem with that is it's not necessarily the number of innings. It's the number of times he gets up to pitch. So if you're going to put him in the rotation as a once-every-five-game starter, people don't realize that you may not be putting the amount of pressure on yourself on your arm because you're not going max every time that you're warming up. But every time you start, think of all the pitches you're throwing when warm-ups. Think of all the pitches you're throwing when you come out before the batters come out, every inning. All of that adds up when you have a pitcher who hasn't been able to pitch 100 innings or more for a while now. So I would rather have Turnbull healthy as it got to the playoffs than risk burning out his arm. Because again, Turnbull's not going to be a star. I mean, Turnbull, the only way he's a starter in the playoffs is something disastrous happens.
Yeah, if there's another starter that gets injured. I mean,
yeah. Right now you have
Wheeler,
three
Ranger,
top starters that you have to make sure get to the playoffs healthy. And if that means giving some rest here or there, you do that. And you have a fourth starter in Sanchez that's pretty reliable.
Look, he's now faced 325 batters in 2024 and has only allowed one home run. He's got a 2.91 ERA. I mean, there's a body of work to show that he's induced ground balls at a higher rate than any starting pitcher in baseball this season. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought you're saying that about Christopher Sanchez, your fourth starter? So, no, I don't think I would.
Who they got for what? I mean, they got him from Tampa for nothing.
Are you loving Orion Kerkering? Just watching that go on with how he's finding his fastball?
Look, I enjoy this whole team, but I want to get back to reliability again because I think that's the key to the playoffs. And I think if you go around the diamond, if JT's healthy again, assuming that he's healthy in a month, reliable catcher, reliable first baseman. I still think even though Stott's not having the best season, reliable second baseman, Turner, reliable shortstop. Although I would argue to you, here, I'm going to get off my own subject. I would argue, because I can't remember half the time what I really want to say 5 minutes from now, so I'll say it now. Marcus Hayes wrote a very good article about what to do when Trey Turner came back. And if it comes down to the Phillies can only get another reliable outfielder by putting in Crawford, Miller, or one of those single-A pitchers.
Put Trey Turner out there.
Put Trey Turner in the outfield
and have Soto
and
Sosa and
Soto's the bad pitcher.
I don't
Sosa's
know anybody's name this morning, so yes. So I have Sosa and Stott as
yeah. By the way, I would get rid of Soto.
Yeah.
But I would put Sosa at shortstop because if you look at the advanced metrics, which by the way I don't understand half the time when they put these things on the scoreboard,
too advanced for you.
Yeah. well, okay. You've gone to Phillies games recently, right?
Yes.
There's a whole bunch of scoreboard space, and now, you know, they've made the full-length scoreboard on right field, too.
Yes.
You know, the one but in the outfield.
Yes.
That used to just have the number of pitches, strikes. You know,
now it's exit velocity. Pitcher, and.
But now it has the pitcher on one side, and then a versus sign, and the batter on the other side, and has all these statistics that have nothing to do with one facing the other.
All right, Grandpa.
Do you understand any of them?
I don't have to. It's not for me.
Okay.
I'm not a seam head like that. There's plenty of people who do care about that. To me, that's not.
Do you care about the number of home runs that the batter has?
I mean, I think it's interesting. I don't.
It's not up there half the time. They don't put the number of RBI that a batter has.
They don't have that
instead,
for the player.
They have
on the player.
They
stats
have EWAR plus minus 615. I don't know what that is anymore.
Baseball's losing you, Jeff.
They're not losing me, but they're I'm just looking at the field completely now because I have no interest in all these advanced metrics.
Okay. I don't want to forget the fact that you want to get back to controversy creating cash with villains, but I did want to ask before it. We've done a lot in the last few weeks with Hank Aaron, Larry Doby, different players in the Negro League era. Willie Mays passed away this week, and last night Major League Baseball did their broadcast from Rickwood Field. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk for a few minutes. I mean, Willie Mays, 24-time All-Star, 12-time Gold Glover. I mean, I wish I saw Willie Mays play baseball. Your thoughts on Willie Mays passing away? And then let's talk about the Rickwood game real fast last night.
You know, well, Willie Mays, from everything I heard, because, I mean, I don't remember him playing. I remember that he was with the Mets in his last year, and I was 5 years old at that point. So I remember Willie Mays, but never got to see, obviously, how great a ball player is. But with everything that every ball player, every Hall of Fame player is saying about him, that he was the greatest all-around baseball player ever. If you just look at statistics, it tells you that. He was fast. He was strong. He was smart. He played defense. He played offense. He was the greatest ball player of many lifetimes. And he also seemed to be just as great a human being. And he was a guy who, to this day, you can go to a Giants game and see people wearing Mays jerseys. And hopefully you'll see more. He is the game. So many people are the game. You know, that I heard talk about making him the logo for MLB. Do it.
The timing was uncanny given everything with the Negro League stats and the game being played at Rickwood Field last night. Did you catch any of the game last night at Rickwood?
Yeah, and actually the game isn't what touched me so much. It was the mural that in Birmingham, they had put up a mural of him. And to me, it's so touching, but it's also so sad that he missed it by days. And I only hope stories come out that he got to see it before he went.
I thought Fox did a really good job with the broadcast in terms of educating the audience and giving them the full story. I don't even know that Fox expected. I sent you very late last night. I don't know if you watched it, the Reggie Jackson interview with the panel there. And there was one point in the interview where they asked him a question about what it was like to come back. And I think they thought they would get the, it's so great to be back here.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the, you know, I faced a lot of racism here. Mm-hmm. And the explanation of what he faced. And, you know, we've talked about baseball embracing their past. This is the kind of stuff I like to see them do. I thought it was a very good broadcast. I thought the broadcast was really cool. I don't know if you saw it. At one point, they tried to give people the feel of what it would look like in 1954. So they went black and white with the old graphics. And like, it really looked like that, you know, those Willie Mays games that you see in the old films. I just thought they did a really nice job with the broadcast and with telling the story more than just the baseball game.
Yeah, I think for people listening, when you hear some of these older ball players who went through the struggles that they had to go through in these cities, you know, people think life should be nostalgic. And you can have nostalgia and pain coexist. And I think that it's important for people to realize that when some of the people they've interviewed say that they don't get on and say, oh, I remember my glory days when I was doing this. That's not what it's about. That wasn't the experience they had. Because of them, less people have to have those experiences. But expecting people to get on and just say, you know, it was great. I did this down here. I did this. That wasn't their experience. And that's, as you said, that's why it's so important to tell these stories.
I can't imagine. I mean, I'm lucky. I don't have to live with that burden of being treated that way. But I can't imagine going through life trying to keep a positive attitude, being treated that way. And that's what so many of these players and people, not just players, people of all generations, of all different walks of life, had to go through life acting like things were okay when they were treated in a way that clearly wasn't.
See, I don't think they acted as if things are okay. I think that they acted with dignity and honor.
Yes. And so yeah. Maybe the way I said it incorrect, you're right. They
I know what you meant.
Yeah. They put it in perspective for themselves and didn't let it shape their lives the way that it could have in a bad way.
I will tell you, you mentioned the showing the field black and white and those things. All of this discussion that we've had over the last few weeks and talking, you and I talking amongst ourselves, talking on air, talking to other writers about Hank Aaron's experience, Larry Doby's experience, Willie Mays' experience, all of these experiences led to me to my own nostalgia, which is my first ball game as a kid was at Roosevelt Stadium. Roosevelt Stadium was in Jersey City where I grew up, and that is where Jackie Robinson played his first game. And as a result, old me now has a photo from 1946 of Roosevelt Stadium that it's being framed at this moment to go into my office. And I think we should all not forget those times and what those times stood for.
I think that's really cool. I didn't realize you were doing that. I think that's awesome. And I like when I'm the same way. Like, we do this radio show because it's fun and we enjoy it, but we do some interviews sometimes where the things that our guests say live with me long after the interview. They help shape me to go forward and think about things and look in a way that, you know, I don't when I'm just a sports fan looking at balls and strikes or, you know, the controversy and the ratings and things like that. There are human stories here. And that's what we got into this doing was the heart of sports. And look, you found that finding your childhood through an interview that we did. I just think that's really cool.
And so I'm going to go a little deeper. And I'm going to tell you that this is why sports writers are artists and why they're so important. And when we hear that newspapers consolidate, close, they do national stories instead of local stuff, we lose something through that. All of these authors that we have on, most of them are sports writers, telling stories of things that are important from their perspective and from a local angle, from being there every day, as opposed to reading it or seeing on a TV set. And it is so important that we continue to have sports writers, people that tell these stories.
I agree with you. And we'll keep having them on the show to tell the story for our listeners, because I think we're all better off when we understand where we came from to know where we're going. So yeah,
think about it. I mean, this was a less serious issue, but having Tom Hausnick up in Allentown, seeing these guys, as opposed to some sports writer in Chicago reading a box score, how much better is that for all of us?
Yeah, well, look, everybody's more informed. I used to run a political blog in a prior life, and I used to tell people I'm not a reporter. I depend on reporters to do good research so that I can tell the story I want when I blog. And I think we all depend on good reporters to tell the full story so that we can have context to the headline, because the headline isn't always what the story is. I think it's cool, by the way, that you and I didn't plan to have this conversation on the show today, and it just happens. I just think that that's cool, that's how it works for us.
Well, it's cool, and it also shows that we're old and we can't stay on a subject.
Very true. Since we can't stay on a subject and we're old,
tend to wander off.
You know, we meander a little bit. It's okay. We find we're like the GPS. There's a couple of routes. We eventually find the destination. We're just not sure where we're going while we get there. So I'm going to give you some time. We've got about 9 minutes left on the show to talk about controversy creating cash, because we wanted to remember this. And I'm going to congratulate myself because we remembered.
To be fair, you just wrote it down.
I did.
So,
secrets here. Like, way to rat me out on the air.
No, because that helps all of us, because that's what we should do. We should all keep notepads next to us, especially as we get older. It's a way to get through life at this point.
I take notes all the time.
Yeah, but here's my frustration. So my frustrations usually don't go away. So that I can remember.
Our listeners know that your frustrations do not go away.
You know how important women's sports is to our show, to what we believe the heart of sports is. We have had a lot of, especially women's soccer players on our show. And we've talked often about the WNBA. And the WNBA, I think, is at a crossroads right now. This is just my own opinion. And what I mean by that is there are more people, more eyeballs interested in women's sports and should be than probably ever before. And the WNBA has stars, personalities, interest, fans going to it. Hopefully that means more dollars, more sponsorships, things like that. But Caitlin Clark is being turned into a lightning rod that she does not deserve to be. That these issues with Caitlin Clark, the jealousies that surround her, the people that think that they can use her name to advance their own causes, and then her being almost vilified because she says, I don't want to be used like this. She's a person who there are lots of young kids, boys and girls, who are very interested in seeing her and cheering for her. And she should be able to play that game and advance the sport without all this jealousy, without people using her, without all the negativity that seems to surround her but isn't brought on by her.
Isn't that what our culture does, though? Like, don't we build people?
Why? Why do we do this?
I didn't say it's right, but isn't that what people do? They build somebody up to put them on a pedestal only to tear them down in the process. And look, I understand that there are other players in the league, but I generally have a feeling that everybody wins when everybody wins. So if there's more eyeballs watching the game because they want to see Caitlin Clark, that means there's more eyeballs to see Angel Reese and to see other players that are out there making a name in the sport. So I don't understand the backlash, because advertisers and the broadcast want to capitalize on somebody that's out there, because in the end, it will mean more advertisers for everybody. It'll be larger TV deals for everybody. Now, there is the question of, like, you get into, should she be on the Olympic team? Well, what's the purpose of the Olympic team? Is it to raise the profile of women's sports or to have the 12 best players? And then you get the comparison between the men's team when they took Christian Laettner and they didn't take Shaq and all those things. I just think that there's so many side stories around the fact that she's just trying to play basketball that I can't figure out what's coming from where. Like, do you know where it's coming from?
It's coming from all sides. That's the problem. The fact, I think her biggest asset right now is her mental strength. Because all of this noise, there's nothing more than you can say about this. It's just noise. I mean, and somehow you look at her statistics, the way she's playing, and somehow, you can almost forget she's a rookie. And this is, you know, when you look at the NBA, there is a college basketball season that ends in April. They then have months and months and months off before they play games in the fall. She finished her NCAA season, and what, a month later, was playing professional basketball starting her season.
Now, in fairness, every rookie does that.
And exactly.
So, like, I don't want to put her on a pedestal.
Yeah, but let me finish. I'm not saying she's on a pedestal because of that, but it does amaze me that any rookie in the WNBA can perform the way that she's performing. And to then have all of this noise around her, even with regard to, put yourself in her position regarding the Olympic team. I'm sure that part of her dream is to represent the United States in the Olympics. She didn't get it. She's allowed to just sit there and soak that in herself without everybody else saying she should, she shouldn't be, why she's in, why she's not. You want to have pundits saying stuff, they can. But this seems to get out of control. And when you talk about, it seems that we put people up in a pedestal and then we knock them down. It seems that we're doing it faster now. We're not even giving people the chance to succeed and be on the pedestal. So we're literally constructing the pedestal and at the same time compromising its foundation, all at the same time. There's just no breath that's allowed so that people can just succeed and see whether or not They're a benefit to their sport, a benefit to their society. It's just, let's see how quickly we can find something that's wrong.
Is that a product of everybody feeling like they need to have a hot take? Is it a product of
it's a social media problem.
So you think that's, I mean, I,
that's my old man take. Yes.
Yeah. So you just think it's everybody having an instant reaction, hot take, and then people react to the controversy from that.
Yes. And then you have pundits that have come on who think that they need to say something quickly. What you call a hot take, that they just need to comment, as opposed to just sitting there and saying, let's breathe. Just give everybody a chance.
Are we doing that here? Like, we try not to have a hot take, but are we having a hot take on the reaction right now? Or are we having a rational take? I don't
think so. I think this, if you're asking just about what's going on with Caitlin Clark, we've watched this simmer and boil since the first game of the season. This isn't new. It's just every day it's something else. Something else she didn't do. Like, I get it when you have a sports personality who says something controversial. Name me what she has said controversial. Name me what she has done that's controversial.
But does this happen in other leagues where rookies come in and veterans try to put them in their place? And it's more attention because of the attention on her?
Welcome to the show is perfectly fine with me. It's the comments. If a player wants to knock her down or knock any rookie down, I'm okay to a point. Doing it on the opposite end of the court is not necessary. You can just do a hard foul. Afterwards, if you do the hard foul, you don't have to come out afterwards and say what your gripe is.
Any final thoughts?
Made your point.
Is that your final thought?
That's my final thought.
Nothing more profound?
That's all I got.
Well, that's profound. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.